Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, broadcasting from our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we open our show with reactions to remarks made by Donald Trump that critics say were intended to incite violence against his rival Hillary Clinton. While many political leaders are denouncing Trump's statement, one local congressman is defending the brash billionaire, and we'll tell you who on today's show. We also have details on a lawsuit filed by San Diegans against Hillary Clinton over the Benghazi embassy attack when she was Secretary of State. Now on to some hot local news. El Cajon's City Council made some big decisions this week, responding to a grand jury report on homelessness and police oversight, also voting on body cameras for police and a redistricting measure. The homeless issue there led to a very heated exchange between one city councilman and a member of the public, and we'll have the audio of that for you to hear on today's show. We'll tell you why planes will soon be flying higher over Gillespie Field, thanks to the actions of local advocates fighting for years to protect the public safety. Then on Crime Beat, hear the details of a SWAT team action in Santee that ended in the death of a crossbow-wielding suspect who fired arrows at deputies. On Destination East County, learn about all the top festivals and events coming up across our region in the next couple of weeks, from the Heart of Mount Helix celebration to the Ramona Country Fair. Now, on the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview will be with Colin Parent. He's a lawyer and environmentalist who has served in Governor Jerry Brown's administration as a specialist in affordable housing. Now he's running for the La Mesa City Council, where he's hoping a change in the city's voter registration will enable him to become the only Democrat on the all-Republican City Council. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump is drawing fire for remarks that many believe were intended to incite gun rights supporters to shoot Hillary Clinton, his rival, or potentially justices she may appoint to the Supreme Court if elected. Here's what he said during a rally in North Carolina.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, that will be a horrible day.
Some fear that mentally unstable followers of Trump could take his seeming call to arms seriously. But Trump spokesman Jason Miller tried to downplay the inflammatory remarks, claiming Trump was merely urging gun owners to support his campaign, not take aim literally. He said, it's called the power of unification. Second Amendment people have amazing spirit and are tremendously unified, which gives them great political power. Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook swiftly sent out this reaction. This is simple. What Trump is saying is dangerous, he wrote. A person seeking to be the president of the United States should not suggest violence in any way. Dan Gross, the president of the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence, said Trump's campaign was repulsive, literally using the Second Amendment as cover to encourage people to kill someone with whom they disagree. Bernice King, daughter of murdered civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., called Trump's remarks disturbing and dangerous. Patty Davis recalled the attempted assassination on her father, President Ronald Reagan, and also denounced Trump's statement. A California congressman called on Twitter for the Secret Service to investigate Trump. The Secret Service has issued a statement that it's aware of the threat, but has not clarified how much it has discussed its concerns with Trump. It is a federal crime to threaten anyone under Secret Service protection, as both Trump and Clinton are. A veiled incitement to others to commit violence against a presidential candidate may not meet the legal standard as a crime, but it could potentially result in a crime occurring if anyone took action based on Trump's inflammatory words. The comments, at the very least, showed a disturbing disregard for the safety of Hillary Clinton and lives of future judicial candidates. Even top Republicans have sought to distance themselves from Trump over the veiled threat. Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan said perhaps Trump was joking, but added pointedly, you should never joke about something like that. One local Republican, however, has staunchly defended Trump. In a CNN interview, Congressman Duncan Hunter, who represents much of East County, said he can be inarticulate at times and noted that Trump is a businessman, not a politician. However, Hunter indicated he did not believe Trump meant his words as a call for violence. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A San Diego mother of an American killed during the 2012 terrorist attack in Benghazi, Libya, is suing Hillary Clinton over her son's death. The conservative advocacy group Freedom Watch filed the suit Monday in Washington on behalf of Patricia Smith of San Diego, whose son Sean Smith was a State Department officer, Times of San Diego reports. The suit was also filed on behalf of Charles Woods in Oregon, whose son Tyrone Woods, a former Imperial Beach resident, was a CIA security contractor killed in Benghazi. Four people, including Smith and Woods, died after an anti-American militia group attacked the U.S. diplomatic compound on September 11, 2012. The suit alleges that Clinton, who is then Secretary of State and is now the Democratic presidential nominee, contributed to the deaths of both men, as well as defamation and intentional and negligent infliction of emotional distress. But Freedom Watch founder Larry Klayman states, having used a secret private email server that we now know was used to communicate with Ambassador Christopher Stevens with confidential and classified government information, and which we now know was likely hacked by hostile adversaries such as Iran, Russia, China, and North Korea aligning with terrorist groups, it is clear that Hillary Clinton allegedly negligently and recklessly gave up the classified location of the plaintiff's sons, resulting in a deadly terrorist attack that took their lives. The attack. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Tempers grew heated during Tuesday's El Cajon City Council hearing, where Councilmember Tony Ambrose scolded a citizen, Richard Graydon, who had criticized the city's approach to homelessness. The agenda included the city's responses to two critical grand jury reports, one on homeless issues and the other calling for formation of a Citizens Police Oversight Board. The city determined that it already does enough to help homeless people more than other East County cities and also concluded that there is no need to allow citizens oversight of any complaints against El Cajon Police. In response to the grand jury report faulting East County cities for not doing more to address homelessness, El Cajon City Manager Douglas Williford compiled a list of the homeless services in El Cajon. Resources for the homeless in El Cajon include Crisis House, which gets $100,000 in city funds, but offers only short-term food and shelter, and the East County Transitional Living Center, which offers a faith-based discipleship long-term program to help homeless people become self-sufficient, and claims a higher-than-average success rate of getting people off the streets. But El Cajon has no similar long-term program of a non-religious nature. The religious component gets no public funds. Councilmember Gary Kendrick has two graduates of East County Transitional Living Center living with him. Both Mayor Bill Wells and Councilmember Star Bales say they've checked people into the center, and Councilman Bob McClellan has had work done at his home by its participants. The center also has a contract from the Public Building Improvement District in downtown El Cajon for cleanup services, with the work done by homeless people. Other services at El Cajon for the homeless include a supportive living center run by Volunteers of America for those with mental health disorders, free legal aid, and temporary housing vouchers for veterans. The city is required to submit a formal response to a judge regarding the grand jury report, but City Manager Williford recommended that the council send a letter advising that the grand jury's findings and recommendations were in error. However, Richard Graydon, a veteran, addressed the council and suggested that the city can do better. Here are his remarks and a very testy response from Mayor Pro Tem Tony Ambrose, who fired back at Graydon, repeatedly interrupting the El Cajon citizen.
So we may have started, but there's a lot more, and we need to have a place for them to be, and not under the program that we have with that Christian group. It's very important. We can save a lot of these people, and if that person we find out is a veteran, the VA would like to know about so they can help them. But it's very important, and this is something, as I've said before, this is something fairly new of seeing people, the homeless, asking for money and coming out from downtown, moving over. Thank you.
I have response to that, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, Tony.
Yes, Mr. Grayson, What do you do to help the homeless? Is there anything that you do? Why don't you do a non-religious program to help the homeless? Why don't you do that? You know, do you think big government is going to take care of everything?
Excuse me.
No, I'm talking. You spoke. I'm talking now. Okay? I'm not done. The homeless issue, you can directly see how that happened with the state of California. They've been releasing more and more felons out of prison, and they're just flooding the streets with them. Jerry Brown has not done much for mental illness in this state, and that's a fact. They just finally, in the latest budget, they allocated some money for mental health to help some of these people get off the state, get off the streets. One thing I can tell you don't know about homeless issues is because if you're a veteran and you tell AMVETS or tell the police you're a veteran, you want to get off the street, AMVETS will get you off the street. They will get you into a hotel room. They will get you some shelter. And then they will get you into a program immediately. A lot of these people don't want to get off the street. They love it out there. And they like the panhandle. It's easy money. So we have a problem. I used to consult with Father Joe for years on the homeless issue. And I know something about homeless. Father Joe used to tell me, one-third of them... Are you falling asleep up there?
No, I am listening to you.
Okay, that's enough. Stop. One-third of them want to get off the streets. One-third of them have mental health issues and need to get off the streets. One-third of them... He's not interested. I can tell you're not interested in my response to you, and you don't care. I've had enough. Everybody is an expert on the homeless, but nobody wants to get out there and help get them off the streets unless you want to complain about a religious program that helps homeless people. That's your main complaint, is that it's a religious program. But yet you stood up there and said, we need to get Father Joe out here to help. Isn't that a religious-based program?
Okay. No, it is not.
It is.
And no, it isn't, because it doesn't go into details. And plus, the fact is that I'm a veteran, and I have helped other veterans. And the thing is that I am willing to give my money to help the homeless. And the thing is that I will say that you...
Well, good, that's a good thing. I'm glad that you are giving your money to the homeless and you're helping them, sir. That's all.
Excuse me.
Gentlemen.
Religion has been used too much. We can be religious of any type, but we don't have to stick religion into everything.
All right, sir.
You can be a Catholic, you can be a Protestant,
you can.
You can.
That's very good. You are making a good point,
but the fact is, we need to do it without putting religion as the centerpiece of it.
Now, later in the meeting, Ambrose did apologize to Graydon, saying, I'm sorry I yelled at you. And he told East County Magazine afterwards, it's very unlike me, and I apologized. He said he worked as a consultant for Father Joe's Village for a number of years, adding, that's one of the issues that's very near and dear to my heart. I was just having real problems with what was coming out of his mouth. The City Council voted 4-0 to approve Williford's response to the grand jury report on homelessness, with Councilman Bob McClellan absent. Also at Tuesday's meeting, the council voted to reject the grand jury recommendations, which were to build trust within the community by forming a citizens' commission to independently investigate complaints against the police department. So when a complaint is filed, the El Cajon Police Department will continue to be responsible for investigating itself. The council did, however, make progress on the grand jury's goal of building trust between police and the community by authorizing purchase of police body cameras. El Cajon is the 7th city in San Diego County to purchase body cameras for its police force. Now, in case of a violent incident, there should be more concrete evidence to help establish fault. The body cameras have a 30-second buffer, which means that when an officer turns them on, they will have recorded the 30 seconds prior to being activated. The El Cajon Council also voted to put a redistricting measure for council races on the November ballot, and if approved by voters, that will establish neighborhood districts for the 2018 election. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ here in El Cajon, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Federal Aviation Administration has approved a request from Gillespie Field Airport Manager Mark Baskell to permanently raise the minimum altitude for air traffic over the Gillespie Field area in El Cajon by 200 feet, from 1,188 to 1,388 feet. Tim Hester, airport planner with the FAA, July 22nd, letter to the Baskel, states, "This determination was made with respect to safe and efficient use of navigable airspace and aircraft, and with respect to the safety of persons and property on the ground." The change comes after years of complaints by neighbors who contend that an increasing number of flight school students flying low over homes pose dangers to residents, also causing noise annoyance issues. A similar request to the FAA a decade ago was denied, but at least twice in recent years, planes from Gillespie have crashed into the adjacent neighborhoods, including a fatal crash into a Santee home in 2015 that killed a flight school pilot and a student. Sue Strom,
founder of Advocates
for Safe Airport Policy, or ASAP, says, "I am hoping this will provide some relief." Strom indicates that a staffer for Supervisor Diane Jacobs' office confirmed change in altitude requirements will take effect on September 15th, and that Jacob is reportedly very excited about the new policy to protect public safety. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Chisato Iverson.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Crime Beat Report. A man who fired arrows from a crossbow at sheriff's deputies in Santee Friday and died after officers returned fire during a SWAT standoff has been identified as 31-year-old David Michael Moya, a Santee resident. The sheriff's department has also identified the three officers involved in the shooting. Deputy Robert Kostelic is assigned to the Santee station and has been a deputy with the San Diego Sheriff's Department for 9 years. Deputy James Riggin is also assigned to the Santee station and has been a deputy with the Sheriff's Department for 3 years. Deputy Matthew Hemphill is assigned to the Lakeside substation and has worked as a deputy locally for 9 years. Deputies responded to a call Friday night from Moya's mother, who reported that her son had threatened to kill her, might have a mental illness, and that he had weapons, possibly including an axe and a knife. Lieutenant Greg Reilersdam with the Sheriff's Homicide Unit told us that the mother met deputies outside and gave them keys to her home. Moya refused deputies' orders to exit and instead peered around a corner and fired arrows at them from a crossbow, according to the sheriff's report. After additional SWAT officers arrived, Moya went to an upstairs window and fired more arrows at deputies. The deputies fired back, and a robot later confirmed that Moya was dead. The medical examiner confirms that he died of a single gunshot wound. Although officers were under fire, some have questioned whether use of deadly force was necessary. Tom Como, who spent 30 years in the military, wrote in an email to our media outlet, "It's pretty clear to me that they could have elected to go with the flashbang grenade first." He asked why officers didn't try less lethal methods such as tear gas or simply wait for Moya to run out of arrows. But Jan Caldwell, spokesperson for Sheriff Bill Gore, said the officers were in danger, adding, "Lethal force had to be employed as an arrow can travel long distances and we were concerned for the safety of the community. This was a two-story residence, and he had the advantage of elevation and position with a deadly weapon." Caldwell said that by using tear gas may have only further angered him and sent him from the structure into the neighborhood with bow and arrows, perhaps an axe or knives, and or guns. Neighbors were asked to stay in their homes during the standoff. 10 News reports that Moya posted "kill cops" and other hate speech and threats directed at law enforcement on social media earlier Friday morning, the same day that slain San Diego police officer Jonathan DeGuzman was laid to rest.
Grocery workers have voted to accept the latest contract proposal affecting employees at Ralph's, Vaughn's, Albertsons, Pavilions, and Safeway supermarkets across Southern California, averting a threatened strike. Under the deal announced by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, workers will receive a modest 85-cent an hour pay raise on average and keep their health care benefits. The grocery chains agreed also to back off on a proposal to raise the retirement age. Workers will be eligible for raises sooner by 400 hours than in the past, with raises also retroactive to the start of the contract negotiations in March. In addition, grocery stores must give a week's notice of shift changes instead of 72 hours, helping workers who must juggle school, family needs, or second jobs. The union previously voted to authorize a strike if a deal was not hammered out. A boycott had been called against 6 local stores, including 2 in East County. Mickey Kasparian, president of the UFCW local union, said, "The companies need to know members are strong." Carlos Illingworth, spokesman for Vons and Albertsons, says this 3-year contract acknowledges the important contributions of our frontline employees, our most valuable asset, and allows our company to remain competitive, the San Diego Union-Tribune has reported. Ralph's issued a similar statement. The agreement comes in the wake of increasing competition in the grocery industry locally, with companies such as Smart & Final, Sprouts, and Trader Joe's taking increasing market share. 2 other prominent grocery chains, Hagen and Fresh and Easy, recently declared bankruptcy and pulled out of the local marketplace. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes Pokemon, the movie at Santee Lakes, a star party at Mission Trails, and the Heart of Mount Helix celebration.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including an All That Jazz musical theater show, night fishing, the Ramona Country Fair, and the Santee Music Festival.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Pokemon movie is coming to Santee Lakes on August 12th. Entertainment by the 80s band Arena Rock starts at 6 p.m. with the Ghostbusters movie showing on an outdoor screen at dusk. Food trucks will also be available and the gates open at 4 p.m. For directions to the site, you can visit SanteeLakes.com.
You're invited to join members of the San Diego Astronomy Association, weather permitting, on the second Friday of each month from sunset to 10 p.m. at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground's day-use parking lot. Telescopes will be available for you to view the stars and planets. The next star party will be held on August 12th. For more information, visit mtrp.org/events.
Tickets are now available for the 9th annual Heart of Mount Helix, set for Saturday, August 13th from 5:30 to 10 p.m. at the park atop Mount Helix. The popular party on the hill will feature dancing under the stars to the Mighty Untouchables, samplings from over 15 local restaurants, along with wine and spirits from several local establishments, including the Mount Helix signature cocktail. Experience live art demonstrations, live and silent auction items, and musical vignettes against the backdrop of some of East County's most inspirational views. You can view the park's new website at mounthelixpark.org to purchase tickets and get ongoing event details.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
You're invited to drop a line at the last night fishing event of the season at Santee Lakes on Thursday evening, August 18th from 5 to 11:30 p.m. A lantern is required and no radios are allowed. Learn more at SanteeLakes.com.
Visionary Community Theater and City Ballet Orchestra presents All That Jazz, a concert tribute to the legendary team of Kander and Ebb at the San Diego Performing Arts Center on August 19th and 20th at 7 p.m. Composer John Kander teamed with lyricist Fred Ebb to forge one of the longest-running and most successful creative partnerships in Broadway history, their bold, brassy style giving rise to a series of enormously popular and provocative musicals including Cabaret, Chicago, Kiss of the Spider-Woman, and many more. They've been inducted into the New York Theater Hall of Fame and were recipients of Kennedy Center Honors. This collaborative concert event is directed and choreographed by Ramon Montes, choreographer of such musicals as Hairspray, Pippin, with music direction by John Nettles, City Ballet Orchestra conductor and vocalist performer of all genres. For tickets and details, you can visit visionarydancetheater.org.
On August 6th, you can come and catch Spencer John Powell's students from his private lesson classes as they perform in Rain. This series of solos, choreographed by the students from Visionary Dance Theater in La Mesa, celebrate the wonder of Rain. For tickets, visit visionarydancetheater.org.
The Ramona Chamber of Commerce will present the 46th Annual Ramona Country Fair Thursday, August 25th to Sunday, August 28th at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. This real old-fashioned country fair will feature amusement rides, a midway of carnival games, a Wild West show, a country music concert, prizes, food, a stage for live music and entertainment, crafts, shopping and contests for crafters, and cooks vying for blue ribbons. This fair also will feature more than 100 vendors, including local businesses and home crafters and a food court. A variety of crowd-pleasing hometown contests are planned, including a pie-eating contest, frozen t-shirt contest, best mustache contest, and awards for the best jams, jellies, honey, salsa, jerky, and pickles. Proceeds from the fair will benefit the Ramona community, including scholarships to Ramona students and support to other local events that promotes Ramona as a destination. For more information, visit RamonaChamber.com.
You're invited to spend the weekend under the stars at Viejas Summer Nights and Viejas Resort in Alpine each Saturday and Sunday night, now through September 4th. You can dance the night away under the stars at the park with high-energy bands and DJs on Saturday nights, and then finish your weekend at the park with a blockbuster movie on the 30-foot high-definition screen on Sunday nights with an 8 p.m. movie start. For details about movies being shown, bands, and schedules, you can visit viejas.com.
Santee's annual Bluegrass Festival will be held Saturday, September 10th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East. This year's musical lineup features two talented bluegrass bands, the Homesick Hitcher and Mojave Soul. Admission entitles ticket holders to sample several varieties of wine, beer from numerous craft breweries, and food prepared by local restaurants. Proceeds from the One Night Festival are used to fund recreation scholarship programs for seniors and low and moderate income families and provide annual operating funds for the Santee Teen Center. For tickets and details, visit SanteeBluegrassFestival.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Colin Parent. Colin is a candidate running for the La Mesa City Council. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much, Miriam.
So, Colin, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and why you're running for the council.
Yeah, I grew up in East County, San Diego. I went to Valhalla High School. Actually, my first job in high school was at the East County Economic Development Council. I was actually on La Mesa Boulevard, just a few blocks away from where I live today. I'm running for city council because I want to improve La Mesa. I think it's a wonderful town, and I think it can be better.
Well, it's my hometown. I grew up in La Mesa, too. Now, you're a graduate of UC San Diego, and you have a law degree, I understand. So you're bringing a legal background to the council. And you also held an appointed position under Governor Jerry Brown in his administration. Tell us what you did for the governor.
Yeah, so I was appointed by Governor Brown in 2011 to work at the Department of Housing and Community Development, which is the arm of state government that works on affordable housing and a variety of other programs. And my job there was to do several things. I did a reform of the state enterprise zone program, which was a tax credit program, mm-hmm. and then also worked on a variety of things related to redevelopment agencies.
Very good. Well, it's nice to see someone with some expertise in those areas. You also are currently the policy counsel, in other words, the lawyer, for Circulate San Diego. Tell us a little bit about what that group is all about and how that translates into what La Mesa needs.
Yeah, so Circulate San Diego is a nonprofit in the San Diego region, and we are advocates for transit, for safe walkable streets, and for smart growth issues. And so we actually do advocacy at SANDAG and MTS and all around the region to make sure that we have, enough money spent for public transit, for pedestrian infrastructure, for those sorts of things. We also do a lot of what are called Safe Routes to School programs, mm-hmm. where we will work with school districts or local small governments and identify the infrastructure needs that can be used to make sure that people can easily walk safely to school. So it used to be that people would send their kids to school on foot all the time. People would walk to their neighborhood mm-hmm. school. And that doesn't happen very much anymore. Everyone drives their kids to school and drops them off. And so we're helping to retrofit some of those neighborhoods and some of those schools to make it, safe and convenient for people to access their schools.
Very good. And of course, another key part of Circulate San Diego is advocating for greenhouse gas reduction, making improvements to transit to get people walking, taking public transit, riding bicycles and so forth so that it will help reduce climate change, which of course is a huge global issue right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And, a lot of the transportation policy in California is really driven by greenhouse gases. And so SANDAG, the regional transportation agency, they're required to make certain choices that will have a net greenhouse gas reduction. And so when we advocate at SANDAG to spend more money on transit, it's oftentimes through the lens of greenhouse gas reduction. Mm-hmm. And same thing with the cities that are adopting climate action plans. We've been supportive of the City of San Diego's climate action plan and the adoption of a climate action plan here in La Mesa. And the idea being that in order to reduce greenhouse gases, we need to change the way that people are getting around.
La Mesa has been going through holding some public hearings about its climate action plan right now as we speak. What are your concerns about the current climate action plan that La Mesa has, and how would you change that?
Yeah, so the climate action plan at the City of La Mesa is in a draft form, and they came up with this draft about a year ago, and it had some pretty big problems with it. Primarily, it didn't have any enforceability measures. And so the idea was that it was sort of an optional plan. It was just sort of a guidelines about how things, might be. And the problem with that is that the County of San Diego had a very similar plan with without any enforceability measures, and it got thrown out in the courts. And the reason is that it is state law in California that if you're going to update your general plan and you're going to have some greenhouse gas impacts from that plan, you have to have mitigation for that, and the mitigation has to be enforceable under law.
Sure. If you don't have any teeth, why bother?
Yeah, exactly. And so without having that enforceable measures for their climate action plan, La Mesa, if they were to have adopted that plan, would have put the city at risk for litigation. And our entire general plan could have been thrown out in the courts.
Wow. Big risk.
Yeah, it would be a big risk and also a big cost.
Now, I believe this is an area where you differ with the incumbents. I should mention that as of today, we're taping this interview, listeners, on Wednesday. The deadline to file to run for the La Mesa City Council is this Friday. As of today, other than Colin, who is a challenger, the other two candidates running are the incumbents, Councilwoman Ruth Sterling, who's been there for many, many years, and Councilwoman Christine Alessio. Tell us about their views on the climate action plan and how they're different from yours.
Yeah, so Ruth Sterling has said several times at hearings where this was being discussed that she doesn't believe that the climate action plan in La Mesa should be adopted with enforceability measures. Now, that is completely inconsistent with state law. If the council were to follow that direction, they would put themselves up. The entire city would be, subject to lawsuit, and our entire general plan could be thrown out. It's irresponsible and it's incorrect. And Councilmember Alessio, I don't know whether or not she thinks that there should be enforceable measures, but she has said on numerous occasions that she doesn't believe that humans have a contribution to climate change.
Oh, my goodness,
and,
yeah.
Which is inconsistent with the substantial, overwhelming majority of climate scientists. And if you don't believe that humans are responsible for climate change, it's hard to imagine that you're interested in having humans
solve
climate change, right? And so I think we have a very fundamental disagreement, about what our response to climate change should be. And let's just point out for a second here that, you know, adopting a climate action plan with enforceability measures doesn't mean that we're going to generate all sorts of new costs for the city or
right.
for its residents. You know, a lot of these climate action plans that have been adopted around the county include things like building bike lanes so that people are able to use a bike to get to
sure.
work. You know, increasing the amount of treescape in the city to reduce the heat island effect. You know, a lot of these things are just sort of common sense things that everyone can
sure.
get behind. And it's unfortunate that people's sort of very outlier values are driving opposition to an effective climate change policy.
It's definitely a very serious issue, and certainly the U.S. has obligations under the International Climate Treaty that was just recently drawn up, and it's been, you know, the hottest year the last couple of years in a row, the hottest years on record for the entire planet ever, and 97% of the world's climate scientists agree that climate change is not only real, but that man's actions are contributing to it, particularly pumping these greenhouse gases, the fossil fuels, that we've really only seen in the last 100 years or so since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. That's actually measurable in the polar ice cap. I interviewed a climate scientist from Scripps, and I said, how can you tell it's man-made? He said, well, because it's measurable. It's a different form, a different organic form of the carbon dioxide emissions than what you would see naturally from, say, seepage in the ocean. It's only been around since then. So it's just nonsense, frankly. This was my degree, was in environmental studies, and I will say that anyone who thinks it's not real and thinks it's not man-made really hasn't looked at the science.
I think that's right, but also, even if someone doesn't agree with the science, it still doesn't make any sense to subject ourselves to a lawsuit. And
true.
And following state law should be non-negotiable.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Now, you're also an advocate for building affordable homes near transit. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I've been working on affordable housing policy for a number of years since I started working for Governor Brown. And I think that's just a fundamental challenge that we have in La Mesa and also, you know, throughout California is we don't have enough affordable places for people to live. I know people who've moved out to La Mesa because it's more affordable than where they were living before.
Yeah.
And I know people who've left La Mesa because it's no longer affordable to them now. And so we have to have some policy to create more affordable places to live. There's some state policies that make affordable housing more viable and easier to build that we need to make sure that we're faithfully implementing here in La Mesa.
I think most everybody is for affordable housing, for encouraging development near transit. But there have been some issues in La Mesa in recent years about a developer who wanted to build an 18-story high rise, and then I think he scaled it down to 9. I understand that as a candidate, you cannot comment on a specific project because you may have to vote for it. You don't want a conflict of interest. But I think it's a fair question to ask. If a developer is seeking a variance from the city's height limit, which is currently 4 stories in and near the downtown historic village area, is that something that you would ever consider granting? And if so, under what circumstances? Do you think there should be some limits on just, you know, how high you might go?
Yeah, and I think that the answer shouldn't be just about height limits, but about any sort of variance or adjustment from the land use rules.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should be telling developers if they want any sort of special forgiveness from the rules, then they really need to come to the city with an explanation of what they're going to be offering in exchange. So it's not just a giving, you know, you don't want to do just a giveaway, but you want to say, okay, if you want to go more than 4, if you want to go to 5 or what have you, then show us what you're going to offer. And so if a developer comes in and says, hey, I want to go to 5 or 6, but I'm going to give you this great pedestrian walkway or this park facility, you know, those are things that maybe we'd be willing to entertain, but it's got to be a fair deal.
Yeah. Is there a certain height at which you just think it's no way, that it's too high?
Yeah, I honestly, I think it has to be in the context of the particular development. In that particular area, you know, and it's adjacent to a 6-story building and an 8-story building, right? And so is 4 an absolute cap? Maybe not. I mean, 18 is clearly too high, right? And I think that the best judge is whether or not the neighbors are comfortable with it.
Right? There you go. So public input is important, public opinion.
Absolutely. And when you see situations where the public is coming unglued about some development, then that generally means that the project is really out of scale. And so I think we have to, and oftentimes it's incumbent on those developers to do their homework and to do their legwork to have a dialogue with those neighbors before something moves forward.
Yeah. We should mention, speaking of community conversations, that you are co-founder of the La Mesa Conversations Group. Tell us just real briefly the vision behind that and why you felt it was important to encourage more public participation.
Yeah, so civic engagement has always been very important to me. So we created La Mesa Conversations as a forum to have a dialogue about civic issues that could be outside of government. So instead of the only place where we talk about civic issues being at City Hall, where there's a, you know, the public speakers only have 2 minutes and that kind of thing, but we can have we can do some events and talk about some things and have some really smart conversations about issues that are affecting all of us.
Very good. You also co-founded the San Diego Leadership Alliance, which was aimed at training young professionals in the region to get involved with civic life. You've also been recognized as an up-and-comer by a number of magazines covering the business community. You were named 40 Under 40 by San Diego Metropolitan Magazine. You were named among the top young attorneys by San Diego Daily Transcript and by the Transcript as 40 Under 40 business professionals. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
So speaking of business, La Mesa has really suffered in recent years with the more or less demise of the La Mesa Village Merchants Association. Granted, they went through some hard times between the economy and the streetscape shutting down a lot of the businesses, traffic for a year. But last year, they got into trouble where they got the city to basically extend them credit on the Oktoberfest. They were not able to pay that back. It was a lot of money for security and stuff. And basically, they may be around on paper, but they're really not able to do anything. This year, the city took over the running of the Oktoberfest, and they've outsourced that to a private company now, a marketing company, so we'll see how that goes. But what do you think needs to be done to revitalize the business community in the historic downtown district particularly?
Yeah, so I think one of the keys to making a business district like this successful is to have some sort of entity, organization to represent those businesses and to attract new businesses. So the Village Merchants Association was trying to fill that void and it didn't, and it's no longer here. We need something else to replace it. And there's some really great examples that we can borrow from. You know, neighborhoods like North Park have been really successful bringing new investment, making it a vibrant, walkable neighborhood. We can and should have something like that representing those businesses.
What should the role of the city, in this case La Mesa, be to encourage or foster a new business group to step forward to replace the old one? And are there any efforts underway already?
Yeah, I think there are some things that the city can do. I mean, one is just being a convener to be able to say, hey, to the businesses, we think that you need something external to us that can advocate for your interests, and doing whatever the city can to bring those people together to have that conversation. But then also, you know, if there's other support that they need, if it's, you know, some startup capital, some of those other sorts of things, I'm very willing to entertain that. I think that could be an important thing. There are some efforts right now to create a new association for those businesses to identify and to try to figure out how they can sort of recreate a new entity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's terrific, but the city has to make some strong signals to them that they're in support of it and that they're not worried about having something like that.
Who's taking the lead on that?
So my understanding is that it's some of the business owners who are doing some new projects in the village.
Like the five new restaurants that are coming in?
Yes, yeah, but they've also had conversations with other existing businesses to try to get their participation mm-hmm. and input. I believe they've already filed some paperwork to form an organization. I think it's still very much, you know, in the works at this point, but
like a new nonprofit business group?
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting.
Yeah, but that's the kind of thing that we need more of. Yeah. And I'll just say too that a successful group like this doesn't just advocate for those businesses, doesn't just help them get permits, but they also put on events, they also program, they also bring people into the village. That's something that the city is doing now. They're hosting Oktoberfest and they've hired a consultant to do it, and that's fine, but ideally you want this to be done by the businesses themselves. Businesses are much better at figuring out who their customers are and how to get them there. This is not the sort of thing that's best done within government.
Well, there are some very successful business people getting established in La Mesa now. Certainly we have one cone restaurant already open and a second one on the verge of opening right now. And that's one of the most successful restaurateurs in all of San Diego County.
Yeah, no, I think it's a reflection of an understanding that it's a maturing downtown and there's a lot of opportunity and that there's a customer base that's really interested in having some new options to explore.
Yeah, maybe we'll be the restaurant row of East County, just like the gas lamp downtown.
Let's hope so, yeah.
Sounds good. A couple of other issues. Let's talk a little bit about police and public safety, traffic issues and so forth. What do you have to say on that?
Yeah, so public safety is extremely important. You know, we spend a little more than half of La Mesa's budget every year on police and fire. We've got to make sure that we keep committed to strong public safety and fast emergency response times. I have certainly heard from a number of quarters that we have some challenges with retention, especially in our police department.
Yeah, a lot of turnover.
Yeah, it's a lot of turnover, and they're pretty successful about getting keeping the total number of officers there, but it's through with a lot of people coming in and out. And this is a challenge that other departments in the region are also having, and it's because of housing costs, right? And so that people are getting pulled away to other departments where they're paying them the same, but the rents are a lot cheaper, right? And so we have to make sure that we have competitive pay and benefits for police and fire, but then we also need to think about what other things we're able to do in order to keep people here and to keep them invested and have their careers here in La Mesa.
Yeah. How about traffic safety? Do you see any issues there?
Yeah. I think it's about, 1 to 3 traffic fatalities every year that happen in La Mesa. It's not as bad as some other cities in the region, but, these are people's lives and we should be designing our streets so that they're safe and we should let no traffic fatality happen if they can all be solved if we do these things correctly. One of the things that I do at my work at Circulate San Diego is advocate for an initiative called Vision Zero, which is a commitment that we're getting cities. We've got the city of San Diego to make this. We're asking other cities in the region to make this, to commit to zero traffic fatalities within 10 years.
Wow.
And it sounds really ambitious, but it's doable. And other cities that have made investments in how they design their streets, how they do enforcement for their traffic law, and how they educate drivers and pedestrians about safety have shown some really significant reductions in traffic fatalities and serious injuries. So we know that there's an intersection that generates a number of pedestrian fatalities, then we should rethink about how we design that intersection.
Okay. A couple of other issues. Last week, the city of La Mesa, the city council, responded to 2 grand jury reports that were critical of the city. One of them had called for a citizens' oversight board for police, which they basically said we don't need because we think that the internal investigations here is fine. We haven't had a lot of complaints. The other was on homelessness. And on that one, the city essentially said we think we're already doing enough. And other than joining the Regional Continuum of Care Council or something, committee or whatever it is, they really didn't, seem to suggest a lot of new initiatives to help the homeless. What are your views? Do you agree or disagree with the council's actions on those 2 issues?
On the police oversight boards, those have been successful in a lot of large cities. I'm not convinced that it's as necessary in a place like La Mesa. If you go to the city council meeting, every other week, this chief of police is there and, he's right there. He's making a report. He's talking to people. So I think there's probably enough connection right there.
We're not Ferguson. We haven't had these allegations of police misconduct here that I'm aware of.
Yeah, that's right. And so, I'm not interested in just creating, looking after solutions in search of problems, right? So I don't think that's the right approach. Whereas for homelessness, that one's, a little more challenging. Right now we see that the county grand jury report showed that the city of La Mesa was spending zero money on homelessness and the county was spending zero money on homelessness in La Mesa.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. But yet we are generating $200,000 a year in costs from responding to service calls related to homelessness.
Yeah. The Chief Vasquez with the La Mesa police indicated the officers are spending about 20% of their time dealing with homeless people. So it's not free. Not spending the money officially for homelessness doesn't mean you're not spending it. It's just kind of hidden in some of those other budget items. So what's the answer?
Yeah. So the answer, well, first of all, the answer is that the police still need to respond to those things and that they're doing their job by responding to it. But we also need to rethink how we're addressing this. We want to try to address this on the front end and not on the back end. We want to try to help these people who are homeless so that they're not creating problems that we have to deal with on the back end. That's one. But, you know, the other thing is that if we took that $200,000 and put it on homelessness services in La Mesa, it still wouldn't be nearly enough to address the problems.
Sure.
So we have to go to the county and say, hey, we need more help out here. So
yeah.
They're very focused on some of the larger concentrations of homelessness in the city of San Diego, mm-hmm. and the city of Oceanside and some of those other places. But we need resources here, too.
What about going for some grants? I know the grand jury indicated that there is some federal grant money available to help with the homeless, but a lot of the East County cities hadn't even asked for it.
Yeah, there's some grant opportunities, but, you know, I don't think we should just be banking on the possibility of grants. I mean, the county gets a lot of federal money every year that they're obligated to spend in the region. And small cities like La Mesa don't get that money directly. We get it, our share is given to the county, and the county is supposed to be spending it. So we need to be a stronger voice at the county and say to them that we need their help and to not be complacent with what we're already getting.
Yeah. Speaking of stronger voices, I see on your website that you're calling for the city to change its city council meetings to the evening hours so that more people can participate.
Yes, absolutely. So every other council meeting, they begin at 4 p.m. and that's just not an option for people to come to who work a regular 9-to-5 job. So we should be encouraging people to participate in city government. We want people to show up to the city council meetings. And so I think we should start them at 6 o'clock. All of them should start at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, Lemon Grove does that. Why can't La Mesa?
That's right.
Okay. You also have some ideas, I understand, on bringing back the Human Relations Committee. Tell me why.
Yeah, so the council voted recently to fold their Human Relations Committee into another committee and to not have it stand alone. And I think this is reflective of a more inward looking culture and mentality on city council right now. So the Human Relations Committee is the committee that's supposed to be out there, advocating for diversity. It says right in its, charter that it's, to advocate for fair housing issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting rid of that, you know, removes that voice.
They used to do things years ago. For many, many years, the Human Relations Committee put together a multicultural festival in La Mesa that was very, very nice with the Martin Luther King choir and all the different ethnicities coming out and doing song and dance and food and so forth, and it was suspended supposedly, I thought, just for a year when they had the centennial that fell in the same month, and then it just kind of quietly fell by the wayside. And yet the city is more diverse than ever. We mm-hmm. have a lot of people from around the world starting to move in. So, it just struck me as kind of an odd decision.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's not that they didn't have any reason to do it. The commission probably was being less active, but the solution for... And that's going to happen from time to time. The volunteer committee is
sure.
going to be, you know, more or less active depending on the leadership from year to year. But the solution to a committee like that becoming less active is not to put it away, but instead to bring new people on board and to recruit new people to participate. And I think we need to be really open and eager for that in La Mesa. There's plenty of people who want to get involved. We just got to make sure that they know that we want them to get involved.
Yeah. Now, you've also criticized the city for a lack of transparency on the process to replace the city manager.
Yeah. So the council hired a new city manager a month or so ago without any public process. So there was an announcement that the outgoing city manager was retiring. In the same meeting, they announced his replacement.
We should note that this is a new council with, you know, major changeovers in the last couple of elections. And that in the past, La Mesa always did have a very robust, open process when they chose a city manager. It would be, you know, advertised all over. There'd be hearings, and the public would have a chance to say whether they liked the replacement candidate or didn't like them or whatever. And this time they filled it from within without any of that.
Yeah, that's right. And let me be perfectly clear that, you know, the person they hired seems very competent and qualified, and I suspect she'll do a great job.
Yeah.
So, but the problem is the process. What would have been nicer is if we had an opportunity for people to come and tell us what they liked about the existing city manager and what they might like the new city manager to do better or differently. Hiring a city manager is one of the most important things that a small city government does, that and pass a budget.
Yeah.
And so we have to make sure that those big decisions are done in an open and public way that encourages more input.
When La Mesa passed the bond measure a few years ago for new public buildings, they built the new fire station, the new police station, and so forth, and what was supposed to be a temporary library, but
Lately, the new council has balked at building the new permanent library that many citizens thought they were going to get. There's also not been a civic center, but there's some people who think a new civic center should also be eventually built. What are your views on those two projects?
Yeah, so the La Mesa Library is really packed. It's really utilized very well. Every time I go in there, there's no place to sit. Everyone's using it. So that's a good sign, but it also is reflective of the need to have more space. So I'm very committed to saying that if we're going to do any sort of civic center improvement, that incorporating more space to the library needs to be a part of it.
Okay. And how about the civic center?
Well, I'm open to the idea of doing a new civic center. They have done some financial studies to identify how it could be paid for. And I've worked in government. I used to work in an old building at the Department of Housing and Community Development in Sacramento. There were bats in that building,
oh, no.
Right? And there, one of the young lawyers there had an animal die in the wall
to
his office. It was terrible. and that infected employee morale, and it was not good. And so it does matter where your government works.
That's true.
Yeah. So I'm open to that. I haven't made up my mind, I guess, about whether or not we should do it or how we should do it.
Open to the proposal if it made financial sense.
That's right. But if we are going to move forward with it, it's, you know, one of my prerequisites is going to be that we incorporate some additional space for the library.
Okay. Tell us what endorsements you've had that you're most proud of.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one of my favorite endorsements is from former Senator Christine Kehoe, who is one of my bosses and several points in my life. I've helped her out on a couple of her campaigns, and I was an intern for her when she was in the state legislature. Her mentee, Tony Atkins, is also a supporter, an endorsement of mine.
Former Speaker of the Assembly in California.
Yep. And she's going to be a member of the Senate very soon. I have endorsements from Todd Gloria and David Alvarez, both on the San Diego City Council, and Mary Sessom, who's the mayor of Lemon Grove.
This is a nonpartisan race, as are all local city council races, but that said, your opponents have been endorsed by the Republican Party for years, and it should be noted that you're a Democrat, and La Mesa now has a majority Democratic registration, I understand. Is that still correct?
Well, it's a plurality, so it's about 40% Democrats and about maybe 35% Republicans.
Interesting, and yet it's 5 Republicans on the council. Do you think that the time is right for a Democrat to be elected in La Mesa?
Yes, absolutely. And it is a nonpartisan election. I'm not just going to be talking to Democrats. I'm certainly not going to govern in a way that's only going to be appealing to Democrats. Mm-hmm. But President Obama, when he got elected in La Mesa in 2012 and 2008, he won by 10 percentage points. So there's actually a strong Democratic constituency here in La Mesa that doesn't currently have any representation.
Well, I want to give you the final word here, Colin. What else would you like our listeners to know about you or your candidacy, and where can they go to find out more information?
Well, if anyone is interested in learning more about me or my campaign, you can go to colinparent.org, and we've got information about the issues that I'm concerned about and how you can volunteer. And if someone wants to send me an email or give me a call, my email and phone number are right there.
And listeners, of course, we're nonpartisan radio here, and so we certainly will be extending an invitation to the 2 incumbents in this race, as well as any other candidates who may come forward before the close of the filing deadline for the La Mesa City Council. Again, if you just tuned in, we've been interviewing Colin Parent, an attorney and a candidate running for the La Mesa City Council. Colin, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.